Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to a Thursday edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast, presented, as always, by WinBet. Check out winbet.com for all your sports wagering needs. A lot of wagering to be done, certainly, this weekend, as we have six NFL wildcard games coming to us Saturday, Sunday, and even Monday night. But we'll be talking NBA on the RotoWire NBA podcast. I'm joined by James Anderson. James, we have a fairly small agenda to get to today. We're going to talk about some of the biggest surprises, both positive and negative, of the season so far, as we're right about at the halfway point, about a little under a month to go until the trade deadline, a little over a month to go until the All-Star break. We'll talk about Damian Lillard, set for surgery. We'll hit on the blockbuster Kevin Knox trade from earlier this morning. But I want to start, James, with kind of another pity party for myself, with the Los Angeles Lakers, who I'd get another second half collapse. I don't even know if you can call it a collapse at this point when you expect it to happen against a really good Sacramento Kings team. And, you know, we were discussing some of the fallout from this game on Slack earlier today. I sent you a slew of, kind of anti-Russell Westbrook tweets, including some nice video work by the game ops team in Sacramento last night. And I said, I feel like, you know, Russ has hit rock bottom a few times this season, but this feels like a newer, even lower rock bottom for Russell Westbrook, who has now scored fewer than 10 points in three straight games.
Yeah, it's getting pretty ugly. It's getting kind of uncomfortable, because it's just so toxic, and there's just clearly nothing that can be done to fix it, really. I posited to you that this might be the worst contract in NBA history, and I think you correctly maybe sort of recalibrated it to like the best contract since the amnesty provision. Or the worst contract since the amnesty provision, I should say. And so there's just no real way to kind of fix the situation, and it's gotten so bad that, like you're saying, but it's very, very unusual for an opposing team to kind of make fun of a player like the Kings were. And I mean, you can't really blame the Kings. I mean, they're the Kings. They've always sort of been in the Lakers' shadow, and they're having a terrible season. So, what else do they really have to do? But things have gotten really, really bad if there's just that little kind of respect left within the NBA community.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to bring up, that, you know, we've seen several players throughout the year kind of take, you know, veiled shots at Russell Westbrook. You know, a couple of guys have have, you know, mentioned like the stat padding in the past. And I think I wouldn't say there's like a league wide, you know, joy in watching this Lakers team struggle. But I think there's a lot of teams around the league that, you know, for better or for worse, don't exactly enjoy when the Lakers succeed based on, you know, some of the ways that they've gone about business, especially I think in the last 7 or 8 years. You know, I think there were a lot of people that didn't think the Lakers like deserved to get LeBron when they got him after that final year in Cleveland. And based on what they had done the previous few years, it was pretty hard to argue anything other than that. I mean, LeBron went there because it's LA, because it's the Lakers. It wasn't like it was the best team situation for him whatsoever. And you know, LeBron kind of single-handedly bailed out the franchise. They get the title in the bubble. And now it feels like everything has come completely crashing down. I mean, that was only 2 seasons ago. That was a little over one calendar year ago that the Lakers won that title. And that, I mean, now it just seems like such a distant memory as this team just continues to get worse and worse. And, you know, Alex and I talked about it earlier this week. Like the Lakers, I think going into last night, were still like 14-1 to win the title. And a lot of that is the Lakers brand, and they have LeBron. And, you know, we've seen people kind of count him out before, and then he ends up in the finals, doesn't always win it, but usually finds a way to get there. I just don't see that happening with this team. And, you know, the one thing I guess you could argue to counter that is, well, Anthony Davis is out. You know, if he comes back, he was actually playing fairly well despite the jump shot statistics. You know, obviously they're a much better team with Anthony Davis, but I mean, it's not like you can count on Anthony Davis to just come back and be healthy and play every game the rest of the way. So, I mean, I think we're at the point where the Lakers probably make the playoffs, but I personally will be surprised if they make it out of round one, due in part to the fact that you're almost certainly, you know, if you make it out of the play-in, which is likely where they're going to land, I mean, you're playing Phoenix, Golden State, you know, a Memphis team that looks really good, Utah, like all of those teams to me are too balanced and have to have too much infrastructure, with maybe the exception of Memphis. But I think those teams would just be able to kind of toy with a team like the Lakers that, you know, if you can kind of let LeBron get his, but I don't think there's really anyone else that you're overly worried about unless you get one of those rare games now where Anthony Davis is super locked in.
I really, really want a Lakers-Memphis first round matchup, because I think that that would be the most entertaining way for the Lakers season to end. Like, I mean, if they lost to the Jazz or the Warriors or the Suns, it would just be such a thorough beatdown that it wouldn't be, and like nobody would be surprised. Everyone would be picking one of those teams in like 5 or 6 games. But for Ja Morant, Ja Morant loves to talk smack and, you know, showboat and stuff like that in kind of a good natured way. And just kind of having that all going down with the Lakers just kind of in a state of depression on the bench, like that would be just quite a spectacle.
Yeah, and it's pretty easy to imagine, right? Like it doesn't seem like that's a far-fetched outcome whatsoever, you know, where you have it's like 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, Memphis 108, Lakers 82, LeBron is sitting at the end of the bench, clearly done for the night. You know, the camera pans to Russell Westbrook and shows that he's like 4 of 19 with 7 turnovers. Like it almost feels like that's a guarantee to happen at some point. And that exact scenario has basically played out a number of times already during the regular season. You know, the obvious comparison, I think, is to that Steve Nash, Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant, this is going to be fun Lakers team from 2012-13. I went back and did some recon on that team. And, you know, I kind of thought I would find that it would be a similar disaster, but I mean, that team was 8 games over .500. They finished 45-37. They did end up firing Mike D'Antoni late in that season. Mike Brown and Bernie Bickerstaff finished it out. But, you know, Kobe Bryant and Dwight Howard stayed healthy. The biggest, like, individual disappointment, I think, was Steve Nash, who at that point was 38 years old. His back had officially given out, you know, really was never fully healthy at any point in that season. You know, I think looking back, maybe it's less of a disaster than it seemed at the time. Like, the point I'm trying to make is that this season feels like more of an unmitigated, you know, fire for this Lakers organization than even that season was, that, you know, 8 years later, people still make fun of.
Yeah, I don't see many parallels there other than just the fact that it was the Lakers, because I think most people thought that Nash, Howard, Kobe team could win the finals. And I think almost every smart analyst out there was panning this Westbrook acquisition the moment it happened. And mm-hmm. the that Nash Howard team, as you alluded to, it was kind of a just, you know, guy kind of reaches the end of his career from a health and durability standpoint. And Nash, like, if Nash had been playing, you know, doesn't Westbrook, like, isn't he close to like the NBA league lead in minutes played this year? Like if Nash had been, you know, averaging 35 minutes a game and not missing any games, and they'd just been a disaster, you know, then I could see some parallels. But this has just been a complete disaster from a roster construction standpoint, and the pieces just not fitting at all. Versus just signing a bunch of old guys who were having a hard time staying on the court. I think, again, it's kind of the expectations. Like, people were saying the Lakers might get to the finals just because I think people were just kind of wrongly too down on teams like the Suns and the Warriors. But nobody thought that was a good trade to get Russell Westbrook, other than maybe just people that hadn't been paying attention. So it's just, I think we all sort of expected it to end poorly, but like I expected it to end poorly in maybe the second round of the playoffs, where some team just really took advantage of the fact that the Lakers were playing Westbrook and just dared him to shoot and all that type of stuff, and attacked him in the pick and roll. And, you know, I think at this point it would be a surprise to me if they got to the second round.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to frame it. I think a lot of people, you know, like ourselves who were down on the move, would at least admit, yeah, there's probably going to be a 10 or 20 game stretch in the regular season where this looks okay. And, you know, LeBron is able to defer to Westbrook, and, you know, maybe he has a hot shooting month and all of a sudden, you know, this looks like it's going to work out. But a lot of those people would say, yeah, once you run into the wrong matchup in the first or second or third round even of the Western Conference playoffs, then you're going to finally pay for having Russell Westbrook on your roster. And like you said, it turns out that they've been paying for it throughout the entire regular season. And unlike the last few years in Washington and in Houston, where Westbrook got off to similarly bad starts, you know, midseason, he kind of picked it up and was really good the rest of the way in each of those stops. And if anything, it feels like he's trending in the wrong direction. Like it's kind of impossible to imagine over these last 40 games that Westbrook just becomes a completely different player. You know, I think the narrative that, you know, LeBron is finally the guy that can get through to him, you know, he's not going to have these defensive lapses, that's out the door. Like that ship has sailed. That's not happening.
Do you think LeBron, like, how much has LeBron or Frank Vogel or anyone tried to get through to him? Like, I never know whether it's just him being completely unreachable or people just not feeling confident enough to try to reach him. I mean, because he, like, by far the best thing he could do over the rest of the season would be to just expend all that energy on the defensive end and just really kind of lock in, trying to be kind of a Marcus Smart type of player, basically, where he's just trying his best to shut down the other team's best guard, and he just sort of spots up in the corner on offense, and obviously runs a little transition when LeBron's off the court. But like, is that just like, have people like tried to tell him that and he's just been like, no, F you, or have people just not even attempted to tell him that? I guess I don't know. I mean, I'm with you that there's no, if it hasn't happened yet, like, it's not going to happen. I just don't know whether it's him refusing to or people just not asking him to.
If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions. And even more so, making the right decision. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more are at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 6 U.S. states, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding nationwide. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners
a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. All you have to do is download the WynnBET app right now. That's WynnBET, 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 the exclusive partner for RotoWire's Fantasy Podcast. Thrive Fantasy is back for another season of fantasy basketball, and they're running guaranteed contests every single day this NBA season. With Thrive Fantasy, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus on only the top-tier athletes who have the biggest impacts on the game. Sign up today, and you'll get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription that will give you access to everything on our website, not just our NBA content, all of our other sports, a ton of value wrapped up in that free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Here's how you can go about claiming your free RotoWire subscription. Step one, visit rotowire.com/thrive. That's T-H-R-I-V-E. Step two, deposit a minimum of $10 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $100. Finally, step three, play in your first paid contest and then you'll receive that free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Thrive Fantasy, check it out today. The NBA season is underway, and Yahoo is excited to go big on daily fantasy basketball this season. There will be a ton of big prize contests throughout the season on Yahoo, including their multi-entry contests, which are now shark-free. To celebrate Yahoo going big on DFS, as well as Yahoo Daily Fantasy becoming shark-free, Yahoo's giving all users the opportunity to claim a free $10 in site credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 site credit to join one of Yahoo's biggest contests. Yahoo will have daily NBA contests all season long as well. Play a single game contest of your choice throughout the week, then join Yahoo's weekly Friday main NBA contest to compete for large cash prizes. Play daily fantasy basketball on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim that free $10 offer and get started today. That's the number one question that I've wanted to know all along. And that's what I would love to hear when you watch these post-game pressers on NBA TV and you hear Dave McMenamin or Ramona Shelburne, you know, asking, you know, some pointed questions. I don't know why that one has never come up. You know, it has to be on everybody's mind. If we're asking it, people much closer to the Lakers than we are have to be asking it as well. You know, and I was actually surprised. I think it was McMenamin last night had a pretty pointed question to Russ. He's like, you know, what do you think about basically being taunted by another team for how poorly you played? So I don't know, maybe we're working our way up to reporters getting the confidence to finally ask that question, but it's such an obvious one, right? Like, I would love for someone to say, Frank, it's blatantly clear to everyone who watches this team that what Russell Westbrook is doing right now is not working. Have you talked to him about this? You know, I don't know how that question hasn't been asked. Maybe it has, and we just get the diplomatic answers from LeBron and Frank Vogel. You know, I would imagine it's not like either of those guys are going to say, yeah, you just won't listen to us. But it's certainly, you know, that's kind of been the veiled belief. I think, you know, when things fizzled out in OKC, when things fizzled out in Houston, when things fizzled out in Washington, you know, he seems to be well-liked enough among his peers, especially veteran players, that you're not going to see guys like openly trashing him. But I don't know. I mean, if you read between the lines, it's pretty obvious, right? I mean, Kevin Durant said it without saying it when he left OKC.
Yeah. And I mean, I think he, even his sort of stature among his peers has got to have taken some pretty significant hits this season because of just like some of the body language you see from guys like Carmelo and AD and LeBron, you know, after plays. And just, you know, I mean, like it's not, like NBA players all talk and, you know, I wonder if like, has KD talked to LeBron at all this season? Like about, like kind of just sort of like, oh man, this sucks. I wish I'd listened to you or that.
I mean, it's funny because like, it's not like LeBron didn't know this before. Like LeBron must have loved playing against Westbrook, right? I mean, that's what I really want to know is like, I don't want McMenamin to ask Frank Vogel. I want someone to ask LeBron, like, hey man, we all know you had to sign off on this. Why did you think this was going to work? And I think what makes this like doubly bad for the Lakers is, you know, the other obvious pivot was DeMar DeRozan. And like DeRozan himself basically said like, yeah, I was ready to go there. And they kind of blindsided him and chose Russell Westbrook over a guy who's having like one of the all-time late career breakout seasons. I mean, it's just, it's gone as badly as possible. And I think the next question is, I mean, kind of going back to what you said earlier, you know, not only is this maybe like the worst contract in NBA history based on everything that's going on. I mean, there have been bad contracts where you, like, guys just sit on the bench. You know, John Wall. Like, John Wall is not actively hurting the Houston Rockets. If anything, they've said all the right things, and he's, you know, he's been at practice, ostensibly has been willing to work with the younger guys, whatever. Like, Russell Westbrook is being paid that kind of money and actively losing the Lakers games. But you know, that comes to the next question of, like, is he now fully untradeable? Because we've said this multiple times with Westbrook. Like, when he initially signed the deal, he was untradeable from OKC. Then he was untradeable from Houston. Then he was untradeable from Washington. I mean, his value is obviously at an all-time low. It's hard to imagine any team taking him on, even if it's a complete, you know, salary dump type of deal.
Yeah, I mean, like, you think about the other worst contracts that are that big, like John Wall and Tobias Harris. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the Sixers definitely wouldn't take him.
Right, that's the thing. It's like, if you could trade him straight up for Tobias Harris, that's an instant no, don't even think about it, for the Sixers. Like, the Lakers would love to have Tobias Harris, who we're talking about as a terrible contract.
And I asked you earlier, like, I mean, they have to have at least tried to send him back to the Rockets for John Wall, but, I mean, they don't have – I think you would have to incentivize that for the Rockets somehow, because, like, you know, obviously they're trying to get another high pick. Not that Westbrook wouldn't help them maybe get another high pick, but he's so ball dominant that, like, the Rockets would basically just sit him down the way that they're sitting John Wall down. And so you would need to incentivize them further and send them, you know, whatever picks haven't been traded. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we're talking about them needing to incentivize things for the Rockets to even consider trading John Wall for him, then I think it's fairly safe to say it's untradeable at this point.
So the last thing I'll say about this is kind of another callback to what something you said earlier, which was, you know, the degradation potentially of Westbrook's reputation, not only among his peers, but just in terms of how he'll be remembered. And I do think he's relatively safe as, like, an all-time guy, just because as context gets removed, as we get further and further into the future, he's going to be the triple-double guy, and I think he's going to be remembered in a positive light because of that. You know, the context is going to fade as you know, his career fades. But, I mean, in the immediate future, I mean, this guy has gone from a, you know, no doubt one of the faces of the league for the last decade to, even among casual fans, like, I mean, he's the number one joke in the NBA this year. And I think what makes it worse and worse with each passing game is that LeBron continues to play really well. So, you know, LeBron has kind of been able to dodge the blame for what's been an objectively disastrous season for the Lakers, who are 21-21. They're a half game better than the Timberwolves right now. But when you're averaging, you know, 32-8-7 over your last 22 games, and you've had, like, zero bad games in that stretch, like, he's, you know, it's kind of all on Russ. I think that makes it a lot worse for him.
Yeah, I mean, people have pointed this out, though, and I mean, I think it's worth mentioning, like, part of the reason LeBron's putting up those numbers is because he has to play center so much because of how bad Russ is.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, if you were able to run, like, a functional, like, LeBron wouldn't be putting up these numbers in a functional, like, team situation. He's
right,
putting them up because they're playing kind of like the Rockets were playing in the second half of that one season.
Yeah.
Just based on pure desperation. I mean, you can't, like, Westbrook is basically a, like, I don't know, like a center or power forward who can't shoot and can't play defense, and he's your point guard ostensibly, so you need like, everyone else just kind of has to play out of position to accommodate that. So it's a really weird situation. And I mean, I think LeBron certainly has been the fifth most valuable player in the league this year, but you know, I if I had a vote, I would slightly hold the whole Russ thing against him, because it was just such a obvious landmine that they kind of walked right into, and it's single-handedly going to tank their season. So
yeah,
like, I think he needs to shoulder some of that blame.
In some ways, credit to Russ for finally being the guy who has broken, like, LeBron's impenetrable streak of just being able to carry everybody. You know, like, he's had bad teams before. It's not the first time he's been on a bad roster, but he's always been able to somehow find a way. He has this like otherworldly ability to just carry teams to wins, and he doesn't always have to do it by averaging like, you know, 35 points a game. It's like it's not, there's been some of those years where he'll be on a bad Cavs team and the numbers look just okay, you know, 25-7-7, but you know, he maximizes everything else. You know, guys who are 9th, 10th men on another team all of a sudden become more valuable. But Russ has, I think, has officially broken LeBron. Even LeBron cannot carry this team.
It's like when a human is, it's the reverse of when a human is like so good at chess that they're able to beat the computer in chess. Like it's an unprecedented failure by LeBron that is tied to just one massive roster malfunction.
I will say, do the Lakers, with Anthony Davis hurt, is there another top 150, top 200 player in the league? And I know Westbrook falls in there somewhere, but obviously he's been so damaging that it's hard to place exactly where he is. But like, I mean, right now, who is even their third best player? Carmelo? Austin Reeves?
No, THT? Well, I mean, I don't think Westbrook is a top 150 player.
You know, people would rank him well ahead of that still.
Well, I mean, like, if you were just ranking players on the Lakers in terms of who's helped them win the most this year, like, he wouldn't be in the top five. Like,
no, I know. But if you put out a list of the top 200 players in the league and didn't include Russell Westbrook, there would be pushback, is what I'm saying. I'm saying we know how he's valued, but people still consider him, you know, probably a top 50 player. Some people probably consider him a top 30 player.
No,
people do.
No.
I mean, not people that not, I know talking about,
not,
but people do.
Not people whose opinions we should even reference. I would say Malik Monk's probably been their second best player over the past month.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's get to the trade from this morning. Hopefully the first of many before the February 10th deadline. Cam Reddish, Solomon Hill, a future second round pick to the Knicks for a 2022 protected first rounder, That comes via Charlotte. I'll have to look up the protections on that. And then Kevin Knox was tossed into this deal as well. So finally, Kevin Knox gets out of New York. Most of the reactions you see from this morning is pretty positive in favor of New York. I think Cam Reddish, probably still a bigger name going all the way back to his days as like a huge high school prospect and a popular college player at Duke. Obviously, the numbers have not been great. He's at 40% shooting this year. That's a career high. The three-point shooting is come and gone. He's been hurt. So we haven't really gotten a full sample from him. But I mean, for the Knicks, for giving up basically nothing and Kevin Knox for a chance at trying to develop Cam Reddish for a year or two, I think this is kind of a home run.
Yeah, we have no idea what the pick protections are on that.
I'm doing research on that as we speak.
First rounder. Did I see it was like rerouted from Charlotte?
From Charlotte, yep.
Charlotte's probably going to finish around 500 this year. So assuming it's not like top 20 protected or something like that, it'll probably convey and be like the 14th pick or something.
Right.
I think it's fine. I mean, everyone knew like all around the league that the Hawks basically had to trade Cam Reddish before the deadline because they couldn't afford to give him the type of contract he was going to be looking for just because of how many other guys they've signed to long-term deals. And so, you kind of kick the can down the road and get a mid-first rounder. And, I think that's – they obviously canvassed the league. I'm not surprised they were able to get this back. The Knicks, their roster just continues to really – underwhelm me. Like I never tune into Knicks games because they have like 10 players who are all about the same. And I know you would say like Julius Randle's the best player on the Knicks, but I mean, he's had a huge regression season. Like who's even the second best player on the Knicks? I don't know. It's still a pretty, pretty ugly roster, but, Reddish might have one of the highest ceilings, if not the highest ceiling on the Knicks at this point.
Other than Obi Toppin, yes. Reddish is kind of like a slightly more wing-oriented version of Obi Toppin. So, yeah, I mean, realistically, chances are this doesn't end up being like a move that dramatically shifts the Knicks' future whatsoever. But, you're sending out Kevin Knox, who you're finally admitting defeat on that pick. It was doomed from the start. The protections on that pick are pretty heavy. I mean, it's protected top 18 in 2022, top 16 in 2023, top 14, 2024 and 2025. And if it doesn't convey, it'll then become 2 second round picks. So the worst possible pick that you're giving up is the 15th overall pick in 24 or 25.
Yeah. So that's even more heavy protections than I thought it would be. Right. So yeah, you're right. They basically gave up nothing.
That to me tells me that Reddish expressed interest and wanted out of Atlanta, and they were more than happy to facilitate this. Like it doesn't seem like there was a massive bidding war going on here.
Yeah, I mean, you would if there were more player GMs like LeBron, I think there would have been some hefty empty picks dangled around.
I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't be excited if Cam Reddish was like the Lakers' third best player starting tomorrow.
Well, I was going to say, like, how much would Anthony Edwards give up from Minnesota's future picks to get Cam Reddish on the team?
Yes. Recently, Anthony Edwards famously said, if you did not hear, that Cam Reddish is by far the hardest player he's ever had to guard. No question. He must have just been so good in high school or on the AAU circuit that all these guys, he just commands respect from everybody. I think the sneaky storyline here is that RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish are now united in New York. And I think if you're the Knicks, the only reason you're making this deal, other than getting rid of Kevin Knox, is this is now your next step in officially recruiting Zion Williamson to the Garden.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait for that to happen. It's going to be, it'll be a train wreck, but it'll be a fun train wreck to watch. And it seems like the most inevitable pairing of all time.
Yeah, I mean, we're half joking, but that scenario is very possible. The question is, like, what do you, you know, it would have to be likely a trade scenario, we think, unless Zion, you know, were to decline, you know, the fourth year option, which I guess at this point seems fairly plausible. But, you know, I mean, if they're essentially forced into a situation where they have to trade him to the Knicks, and you're end up bringing back like Evan Fournier and Quentin Grimes and Miles McBride, that's going to be a dark day for the Pelicans.
Well, I mean, they would get basically just a bunch of unprotected firsts, right?
I would think so. I think you would have the leverage that you'd hope you'd have.
I would. I mean, if you trade Zion to the Knicks, I would love to get some of those future picks. And just
anticipating a Zion injury.
Well, yeah. I mean, that seems like a safe bet. I think the Knicks would, I think it would be like a Lakers AD situation, with the Pelicans also playing the other team. But, you know, they would just be so desperate to get him that if you just kind of keep holding out until they put everything on the table.
I think the best case scenario for the Knicks is Zion basically threatening to not pick up the option and say, like, all right, you can trade me to the Knicks, or I'm just going to go, you know, try to sign there as a free agent. And then at that point, you know, if you're the Knicks side, that's great, because the Pelicans have very little leverage in that scenario.
Yeah. We're probably getting a little too far upstream,
yes,
but
I think
I do think that will eventually happen.
Yeah, I think so too. In other news, Damian Lillard will undergo surgery on his abdominal injury. This one dates all the way back to at least the Olympics in July and August, potentially even further back than that. He had a cortisone shot back in early December. That didn't really seem to solve the issue, although he played like a pretty good 8 or 9 game stretch after that. Tweaked it again, I think it was on New Year's Eve against the Lakers, and, you know, did not travel with the team on its current road trip. So all the news has been pretty negative surrounding that scenario. And then we find out yesterday that he will undergo surgery. We got a 5 to 6 week timetable. But in my opinion, I think this could potentially be the last we've seen of Damian Lillard this season. I mean, if he's going to come back in like mid-March, and, you know, at that point, we're talking 10, 15 games left on the schedule. The Blazers will almost certainly be out of the mix. You know, maybe they'll be within shouting distance of like that 10 spot for a play-in. But I think there's a pretty good chance that Lillard's year is done.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would drop Lillard in all redraft leagues at this point.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question is, you know, is there even a possibility, if you could trade him, I think take whatever you can get. If you can get like even like the lowest end rosterable player possible, and someone else wants to maybe get Lillard back for 1 or 2 weeks at the end of the season, I'm fine with letting someone else take that risk.
Another like reason why he wouldn't come back is just he can't really afford to like re-injure anything,
right?
Because of the fact that he's eligible for another extension this offseason from the Blazers, which would just be basically malpractice by them to give that to him, but I think they might do it anyways. He has every incentive to go into the offseason as healthy as possible.
Right. And the other point there too is if he does want to stick around in Portland, and that would of course come with what we would think would be some pretty changes around him, you know, you start looking at what you can get out of this draft. You know, if you're Portland and you're Lillard and you want to rebuild and try to get something done over the next 3 to 4 years as you wind down, you know, the best years of your career, you know, if you can land like the third pick in this draft and either use it and get someone who you think can help you right away, or use that pick in a trade, that becomes really valuable too.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, I think that's basically the textbook that they're going to be kind of working off of, is you shut him down, you try to get as high a pick as you can, you get whatever you can for Covington, you get whatever you can for Nurkic, you get whatever. I mean, McCollum's the toughest guy to move. I mean, they'll probably move Nance too if there's a taker. Like McCollum, like, I mean, he's got a sort of indisputably bad contract at this point. So is it worth it to attach, you know, some future picks or like Nas Little or whatever it takes to kind of get off of McCollum? that's kind of the toughest thing for the Blazers is,
yep.
I think McCollum's probably the guy they want to move the most, because I think like the one thing they really haven't tried in terms of trying to build a winner around Dame is splitting up him and McCollum, but this is basically the worst possible time to trade CJ. So, I mean, it'd be kind of underwhelming for them to go into next year with both those guys still on the roster, mm-hmm. but I don't know who the taker would be. I mean, maybe.
Right.
Yeah. The one thing I was thinking about the other day, because everyone's been talking about how the Sixers are trying to maybe use Ben Simmons to get off of Tobias Harris. Maybe would like a CJ for Tobias Harris trade make any sense? Like, are those equally bad contracts and just to try to get a change of scenery for both guys? Or would
I don't hate
like
that.
CJ? I mean, CJ, the problem is like the Sixers are maybe one of the worst fits for him because they already have two undersized guards who don't play defense and Curry and Maxey. So
right.
That complicates things, but like you'd basically need to find a similarly bad contract, I think, to get CJ off the books this year.
Have NBA teams just become too smart? I feel like 10 years ago, like half the league would be trying to get CJ McCollum. They're like, oh, he's a 20 point per game scorer. These guys don't grow on trees. Now it's almost impossible. You know, when you're trying to put yourself in the shoes of these other teams, like other teams seem to be way more like cognizant of where they actually stand in the grand scheme of the league or in the grand scheme of their rebuild. You know, you don't like most teams, you can just cross off. You're like, no, they wouldn't do this because of X, Y, and Z. You know, like you can make a list of like three teams maybe that would potentially bite on a McCollum deal.
Yeah, I mean, like obviously the Kings are still
always
fairly poorly run. Kings. I mean, the Pelicans, you know, the Spurs, I don't think are very well run these days, but they also just never do trades. So they're tougher to pick on. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're definitely right about the fact that it's a lot harder to get off of these. And you don't have it was nice, too, back when you had the Thibodeau and Stan Van Gundy things where they were the GM and the coach and you could go to those guys.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you just don't have many throughways to poorly run teams these days.
Well, I also think the definition of a bad contract has changed, you know, because I don't think people look at CJ McCollum or look at Tobias Harris the same way they look at 2022 Russell Westbrook. You know, you're like, these guys are good players. They're not bad contracts. But when you really start to look at the details and the roster builds and, you know, the path to contention, I don't know if people, you know, just maybe weren't looking that deeply at things like that in the past, or, you know, there wasn't this more holistic mindset where you're not just focusing on the season in front of you. But yeah, I think the fact that we're considering guys like that who are borderline all-star players as bad, like extremely negative contracts, potentially some of the five worst contracts in the league, like the definition of how we define that has definitely changed.
Yeah, I mean, borderline all-star is a bit strong, I think, with these two guys. I mean, if Harris and McCollum were playing at borderline all-star levels, I think you could move them pretty easily.
Sure. I think McCollum would have like three all-star games if he played in the East.
Sure. I mean, he hasn't been anywhere near that level in over a year, though.
Yeah.
Like, basically, he was playing at that level before he got hurt last year.
Right.
And since then, he's not really any better than, like, Seth Curry.
Right. I mean, my point is that, you know, if you're a max or a near max player and you're not one of, like, the top 15 players in the league, your contract is almost automatically bad. You know, it's like, can you be the first or second, or basically, can you be the 1B on a title team? And if the answer is no, then you should basically be making like $10 million. You know what I mean? Like there seems to be kind of a disconnect there.
And there will be other examples of this too. Like, I mean, like there are guys who are sort of just starting contracts like that where, I mean, like Damian Lillard's contract's going to be really bad in a year or two. So like they need to trade him ASAP. You know, even guys like Chris Middleton and like Brad Beal, like in 2 or 3 years, those contracts are probably going to look pretty bad. So it's just, it's a matter of, you know, you don't want to be stuck kind of holding it. Like the Lakers are stuck with Westbrook and you don't want to be kind of the last team with it, because then it's kind of impossible.
All right. Let's talk about some of the biggest surprises of this season so far. As usual, I gave very few parameters when we do an exercise like this. These could be positive surprises, negative surprises, fantasy related, non-fantasy related, players, teams. And like I said to you, you know, off air before we started recording, it was difficult for me to pick too many individual like negative surprises, because especially through a fantasy lens, like a lot of the guys who have been big time busts, you know, Michael Porter, Zion, Lillard, Adebayo, Paul George, you know, Anthony Davis, pretty much all those are due to injury. Like there haven't really been that many players who we thought were going to be really good and have just flat out sucked. So I'm interested to see what you have on your list here.
Okay. Am I starting with a negative or a positive?
You can start with whatever you want.
Okay. I mean, the biggest one for me, I think the thing that I was just the most flat out wrong about was the Bulls. I don't think I was wrong about how good Zach LaVine would be in fantasy or how good Nikola Vucevic would be in fantasy, or even like I have plenty of Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso shares. So I think those guys just having good seasons, those four specifically, is not surprising to me at all. But DeMar DeRozan is kind of the big X factor here, where I remember distinctly passing on DeMar DeRozan in several fantasy drafts where it was just kind of like, this is a kind of a cheap place for DeMar DeRozan to still be available. But I was just like, no, I don't believe in this Bulls roster build at all. I think that I just kind of got sucked into sort of hating the moves they made because of how bad their three best players are on defense. And I didn't spend enough time sort of thinking about how the pieces would actually fit. And I mean, they're fitting better than really anyone. I bet there's not even like a diehard Bulls fan who saw this coming, right? Like,
no.
I mean, on any sort of playoff predictions article or podcast from before the season, if you even said that you thought the Bulls were going to finish with a top six seed in the East, like that was a hot take.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the fact that they are, probably cruising to at least home court advantage in the first round, I think I would still take the field over them for like the one seed, and maybe a couple teams in the field over them for the one seed. But just the idea that they are a pretty good bet to have home court advantage in the first round is a massive upset. And, you know, not having any DeMar DeRozan on any fantasy teams is just such a killer. And probably the biggest surprise for me of this entire season.
Yeah, they were on my list. They kind of have to be on the list by default, unless you were in like the top 1% of Chicago Bulls optimists. And for fantasy, like not only did I avoid DeRozan, but it kind of spooked me on LaVine and Vucevic too. And, you know, and even Lonzo to some degree, at least I do have some Lonzo shares, but I just, you know, like you said, I didn't really buy into the team build. And I thought it could kind of end up being a disaster and all those guys would, you know, have their numbers decline relative to last year. And it turns out everything has just been this perfect seamless fit with DeRozan, you know, just kind of providing everything that this team was missing last year. And obviously Lonzo's been a big part of that. Caruso, when healthy, has been a big part of that. I mean, like you said, I don't think anybody thought that, you know, this team, they lost by like 25 to the Nets last night. They're still first in the Eastern Conference right now. I mean, at the halfway point. I don't think this could have gone any better. And they've been hit with COVID as hard as anybody. So, you know, they've weathered the storm and everything, you know, is pointing toward them at least being somewhat of a contender in the Eastern Conference. The first two positive surprises I have on my list are kind of in that same vein. And I'll group them together, the Grizzlies and the Cavs. And granted, the Cavs have faded a little bit. They're currently in sixth in the East. They're only one game ahead of Charlotte. So it's very possible that this is maybe a little more of an early season mirage for Cleveland than it is for teams like Memphis and for Chicago. But I mean, I think when we did our over unders pod, you know, we kind of dismissed both of these teams, much more Cleveland. Like Cleveland to me was always in like that Sacramento territory where it's just like automatically take the under until this organization proves it can do something right. And I don't, they might have already gone over their number. I don't even remember what it was, but I was extremely wrong about the Cavs. And then with Memphis, I was talking to Alex about this yesterday. I do think I went over on Memphis, but I remember the very smart argument that you laid out, which was, you know, maybe this is a kind of take the foot off the gas year for Memphis. You know, they're maybe okay if they miss the playoffs. You can add another pick. You could tweak some things, and then you really, you know, try to go for it these next few years as Morant enters his prime. And really, for the third straight year, they've gone in the complete opposite direction. And unlike other teams that seem to be always playing for the future, you know, they have not really considered that whatsoever.
Those are the next two teams in my positive surprise list. One thing I'll say about the Cavs is I think the Ricky Rubio injury really hurt them, because he's not the greatest player, but I think he just was the perfect fit next mm-hmm. to Darius Garland. And
well, they have Rondo now, so that'll be fine.
That was just a huge blow for them. And they had had really strong health for like the first 25 games or so. But, you know, then they deal with that. Then they're, you know, Isaac Okoro is another guy who's just, he's not an amazing player, but I think he was like their only wing who could D guys up with any sort of size. And he's missed a ton of time lately. The two guys I was most wrong about here were the two big men, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. I've always liked Darius Garland. Didn't really see this coming, but I'm not that surprised by it. But like, you know, Jared Allen being a borderline all-star, Evan Mobley being a borderline all-star, that's extremely surprising to me. And I took the Grizzlies under like an idiot. And that actually kind of, I think you can juxtapose the Grizzlies with one of my negative surprises, because the Grizzlies have basically been exactly what I thought the Hawks were going to be, because they're winning with this insane depth, and they're winning with this elite young point guard. And that's exactly what I thought the Hawks were going to do. And they're 17-23, and Trae Young's had a really good year. John Collins has had a really good year, and everyone else on that team has been either injured or much worse than expectations. I think people are maybe not talking enough about how bad that Clint Capella extension might end up being. He's had he was basically the key to they've always sort of had this offense heavy roster because of how good Trey is. And I think they, last I checked, had the second best offense in the league. So, you know, I think people need to chill with the idea that Trey Young is having a bad season, but Clint Capella being unable to prop up that defense has been a huge negative for them. And, you know, obviously, DeAndre Hunter, that's not gone very well, both from a health and performance standpoint, and like Bogdanovich, Herter. It's just like you kind of wonder how the rest of those pieces fit. Cause I think Trey and Collins are really, really good players, but I thought the rest of the pieces would fit much better around them than they have this year. And I think Onyeka Okongwu has looked pretty good at times. And I mean, he's probably going to be better than Clint Capella sooner than later. So it'll be interesting to sort of see how that hierarchy shakes out.
Yeah, whether they could dump Capella, whether it's this year or next year or at some point in the future, I think it's going to be interesting, because I think they do regret that. You know, having this ostensibly great defensive center and being the 28th ranked defense in the league doesn't exactly add up. But they're an interesting team to look at, because like individually, everybody seems to be playing pretty well when you look at the raw offensive numbers. Like Bogdanovich has had a little bit of a down year, but he's still at 36% from three on six attempts per game. You know, Kevin Herter shooting it well. Like you said, Collins and Trae Young are both playing extremely well. They are second in offense. So it's like, you know, there's not like this obvious cause for, you know, they don't have a situation where they're, you know, Jason Tatum, you know, starts out shooting like 30% from three. Like everything seems to be clicking for them offensively, but yeah, I don't know if it's effort. I mean, you had comments from Travis Schlenk last week, essentially just saying, like, throwing his hands up, like, I don't know what's going on with this team. So it's not surprising to see them make a move like trading Cam Reddish, you know, who I think pretty clearly was not happy with his role there. Maybe you have some other situations where you kind of have too many guys, and that leads to, you know, some effort issues, some just kind of lack of cohesion issues. But at the same time, pretty much all these guys were on the team last year, and they went to the Eastern Conference Finals, and everything was fine then. So it's a really puzzling situation. But I still am pretty optimistic about Atlanta long term, just because, you know, the two most important guys on that team seem to be trending in the right direction in Young and Collins.
Yeah, and I would buy stock in the Hawks in terms of just them winning at a much higher clip over the rest of the season. It's just they've got too much talent to be sub 500, let alone whatever, 6-7 games under 500. But just the fact that, like, I thought they were going to have the third best record in the East, and that's just definitely not going to happen. So that part of it is a negative surprise.
So I have Franz Wagner and then, to a slightly lesser degree, Scotty Barnes as two of my positive surprises. Wagner, I didn't even consider would be like a real guy this year. Part of it was, you know, Orlando's had a bunch of injuries and COVID absences and whatnot. And I thought, you know, he would kind of be a project player who would make a much bigger impact next year. And there have been times, there's been weeks at a time this season where he's looked like a top two or three rookie in this class. And the top guys are so good that it's kind of hard to imagine him ever having that kind of ceiling. But Franz Wagner looking like a real, you know, quality NBA player from the jump has been a major surprise to me. And Scotty Barnes kind of in the same boat. I mean, I think Barnes has an even higher ceiling, a significantly higher ceiling long term. That to me is not surprising that he's shown flashes. But, you know, even with him cooling off a little bit these last few weeks, like, I mean, I thought there was a chance that, you know, he could play in like 45 games this year. You know, we'd see glimpses every now and then, but he just wouldn't be ready. And instead, I mean, he's playing almost 36 minutes a game. You know, he's been in their starting lineup for virtually the entire year. I've just been blown away by both of those guys.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I think, you know, they both probably would be top five picks again. Or, I mean, Barnes went top five, obviously, but I think Wagner would be.
When you just flip Wagner with Suggs, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how you have to look at it. The Magic kind of saved themselves with the Wagner pick because, you know, he's playing better than I think anyone would have even thought Suggs would have played. So if you just kind of think of it as you went 1-for-2 on those picks, it wasn't the 1-for-2 you thought you were going, but.
Right. Actually had a great draft.
Right. Two sort of established players who have been negative surprises for me. Luka Doncic, who the raw numbers, other than, I mean, the points are down. But just the shooting efficiency is just not where you'd want it to be at all. Especially, you know, year four, age 22 season, he is down over 40 points in field goal percentage compared to last year. You know, down to under 72% from the free throw line, 31% from three. Nah, I mean, I think there's definitely probably some regression coming, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Doncic had a monster second half and still ended up making like second team all NBA or whatever. But, you know, to this point in the season, I think he has to be seen as a disappointment, especially if he ended up taking him, you know, top seven in a fantasy league. And then Bradley Beal's another one where I just, you know, kind of got, well, I took Paul George over Bradley Beal in two drafts. And I thought I nailed that one until now there's a chance we don't even see Paul George back again this season. But, you know, Bradley Beal shooting under 30% from three is just really kind of bizarre. And so he's a guy that's going to be trying to get a max extension this offseason. And, yeah, I'll be interested in sort of see how that plays out.
I had Beal on my list as well. I mean, he's kind of the poster boy for what I mentioned earlier. You know, when you look at a team that's kind of scuffling. And you know, that, with Atlanta, it's like it feels like everybody's playing well. Like there's kind of an obvious outlier here with Beal, where you know he's still giving you 24 points a game. The assists are back up to where they were pre-Westbrook levels. He's at a career high, almost 6.5 assists per game. And even the field goal percentage is still okay. I mean, it's at 46%. So he's shooting it really well from two-point territory. But he's also down quite a bit in terms of free throw attempts, lowest number since 2017. And yeah, I mean, for a guy who we consider, you know, one of the great three-point shooters in this league, and, you know, he's definitely never been in, like, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry territory. He's kind of been more in the Devin Booker zone for most of his career. But, I mean, under 30% for a player who was going probably where? Somewhere in, like, the 9 to 14 range in a lot of fantasy drafts?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really, it's disappointing and surprising because there's just no real obvious answer for why it's gone like this. I think I heard John Hollinger speculate that he thinks he might be playing through an injury. I don't know if there's anything to that, but I mean, he just seemed like such a safe pick. And there's been so many landmines kind of in those top 15, 20 picks from an availability standpoint that Beal's probably kind of middle of the road in terms of value he's returning. It's just surprising to see a guy who is contending for scoring titles averaging fewer than 25 points a game.
Yeah, I mean, even in per game value, he's still a top 40 guy. And yeah, like you said, I mean, you feel like you made the right pick with Paul George or even someone like Anthony Davis, and then those guys go down and all of a sudden it's like, you know, Beal's not even playing that well, but he's still one of the 35 most valuable players in fantasy. Like he's when you take everything into account, including games played, he's been more valuable than Paul George this season. He's been more valuable than John Morant. He's been more valuable than SGA, Devin Booker, which I think more than anything just speaks to how, you know, for the third straight year, how weird of a fantasy season this has been. Anything else major on your list? I just have a quick shout out to Kyle Kuzma, who I just never thought was a good player. But last 11 games, 24 points, 11 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 52% from the field. I mean, he's already had more good games this year than I thought he would, you know, over, like maybe for the rest of his career. So I need to eat at least like a very small crow when it comes to Kyle Kuzma.
No, that's a really good call. I've got just one more positive, one more negative before we call it a day. On the negative side, I mean, you got to bring up, I think Boston Celtics, kind of like the Hawks, I thought that they were going to have a top four record in the East. And I thought that just getting a new voice in the locker room was really going to do wonders for their chemistry. And it almost seems like Brad Stevens ejected on being the coach. Like he was just kind of like, man, these guys are just not gonna work together. So I need to get out of here. But yeah, I don't really know what the move is there because I it's hard to imagine getting fair value back in a trade for Jaylen Brown. But I get the case for wanting to try to shake things up a little. And then on the positive side, I'm just really blown away by how the Miami Heat have been able to kind of keep this thing moving in towards a home court advantage in the first round, given that they have been basically without Bam for over half the season. And Jimmy Butler just is always on and off the injury report. They've had just really good developmental work with guys like Max Strus. Caleb Martin had a career game in a game I was watching. Gabe Vincent's been solid. And part of the reason I took the Heat under before the season was I thought that they were going to deal with injuries and they didn't have the depth to withstand those injuries. And lo and behold, they've developed that depth internally. So that's been a nice surprise.
Yeah, the Heat are a good call. They've been hit maybe worse than anybody in terms of COVID and actual injuries, maybe even exceeding that. I mean, Jimmy Butler, it feels like, comes back and immediately gets hurt every time. I mean, he's played, what, like six games, I think, since the start of December. and he missed some time even before that. Bam Adebayo, of course, has been out 6+ weeks at this point. Lowry's been hero, was in and out. Virtually every player on their roster has missed at least like 4 or 5 games. And the fact that they're now ahead of Milwaukee in the standings for that 3 spot, I think they're a team that, you know, could really, like, they haven't really played more than, what, 5 games with everybody, you know, in a row of everybody being healthy. And Milwaukee can kind of make that same claim. But, you know, with some of the pieces that Miami brought in, I think they maybe need that time more than Milwaukee. So I think they're a team that got off to that strong start, looked awesome through the first 10, 15 games. Everybody got hurt. Feels like nobody's talked about the Heat in forever. But I think they're going to be one of the biggest teams to watch down the stretch. And then, I mean, Boston, in many ways, I feel like has been bailed out by the Lakers being so bad that everybody just talks about that, right? Like, I mean, there isn't, like, unless you're really, you know, really in it on NBA Twitter, then you see plenty of it. But, like, nationally, I don't really think that many people realize, like, how just horrendous this Celtics team has been.
Yeah, that's funny that it's the Celtics and the Lakers that have been the most embarrassing franchises so far.
They have the same record.
I mean, and to the Heat, like, this could end up being I still have questions about how, you know, whether they can have a healthy Lowry, a healthy Butler, and a healthy Bam for an entire playoff run. But just getting guys like Max Strus and Martin and Vincent and guys like that, these reps, you know, they could go into, if they can be fully healthy heading into the playoffs, they could come out of the East. I mean, they're going to be just a really, really tough out.
All right, man, let's get out of here. We got a fun weekend of football coming up. No Packers game this weekend, so we can just, you know, kind of relax and watch football in peace. No Jaguars game either. They go into the offseason red hot. But as always, appreciate you taking the time doing the prep work, and always good to chat with you.
Thanks for having me.